I could say raise your hands. Can you hear me, David? Great. Okay. Good evening. I think many people have been here for many years for our Guru Day retreat, but just for those of you who may not have been here before, it's a really rather extraordinary night every year that just builds, both in how deep we all seem to go and how uplifted, usually feeling like it's right up out of these bodies throughout the evening. So what we'd like is for people to consider treating it a little bit like a pilgrimage, that we go from one shrine to the next and really offer our love and devotion to each of our line of gurus. We're doing this for Guru Purnima. We're a week late this year because of some scheduling difficulties, but it's the full moon in July every year is dedicated towards honoring the guru, and that's what we're doing. We're going to hold it like it's Guru Purnima again, although that was actually last weekend. So we're here really to honor them, to offer them our love, to receive their love, and as we go through the evening, to stay as much in a devotional mood as we can. So we ask everybody to please be silent as we move around. I'm going to just tell you how the evening goes, but we'd like it all to happen in an inward way. I will say right now, at the end of the evening, feel free to stay as long as you want. You can stay and meditate. We do not start cleaning up or doing anything as long as people are here. So feel free to sit and stay if you'd like at the end of the evening. If you happen to have a cell phone with you, could you please take this moment? We would prefer that they were not even on vibrate. We'd really like to, if possible, for everyone, unless there's some reason why some of you may absolutely need to be accessible. But otherwise, even the vibration can be a little disturbing. So let's take this opportunity. I want to just say a word about these, what we would call statues here, but the Sanskrit word for them in each of these shrines is murti. And it holds a very different significance in India. Perhaps many of you have been there when they've done what is called an installation around a murti. They bring these statues, which are clay or made out of whatever they're made out of, and then they do some puja, some festival prayers at each statue. We'll be doing that tonight by way of a talk, a chant, a meditation, more music than just the chant, offering a light. Each of you will have an opportunity to bring a light to each of the masters. And the feeling is that we are calling on these masters with such deep reverence, really, that their energy, their essence, comes in, and these, what we would call statues, but what are now murtis, really come alive with their energy. So as we move from one to another, please feel that it's our prayers, our love, our devotion that calls them to be with us tonight. The format of the night is this, other than the first with Swamiji, and with Jesus. And I think either Rose or who's ever leading the music will guide us through this, so we don't have to worry. You just pay attention to when we're supposed to sing or when we're chanting. After Jesus, the format of the evening is we have a talk, we do a chant. There's usually another piece of music right at the shrine. Then we meditate for 10 or 15 minutes. After we meditate, and each meditation will be ended with an om, after we are done meditating, you'll go to one of these tables, obviously this one first. You take a candle, everybody takes a candle, and take it back and place it anywhere in or around the shrine that you'd like to place it. Please do not try and do this one by one, because otherwise we will be here all night. We will miss the moment at the end where all the shrines are lit. So feel free to just get as many people in there as you can. Take whatever time you want to offer your candle. But don't be as polite as we usually are in this country when we're waiting in lines. Then after you've placed your candle, please take your chair if you can. If anybody needs help, there are always plenty of people who will notice and they'll help you. And you're going to take your chair to the next shrine and set them up very much in this same sort of semicircular way. Tonight we're starting with Swamiji. For those of you who have been coming for years, you know this is a little unusual, but we decided to do it this way this time. Then we'll go to Jesus, and then we'll go in the usual order. Jesus, Babaji, Lahiri, Sri Yukteswar, and Master, just the way we always pray. So from here next, we'll go to Jesus. So after you've left your candle here, please pick up your chair and take it over to Jesus. There are two bathrooms in the upstairs of that building. I think we ought to stick to using those bathrooms. We have guests in Chela Bhavant tonight. So let's just say there's two bathrooms. You walk into that building at the far end of the courtyard and go upstairs, one on either side. And I think we have some extra shawls and blankets. It's hard to imagine now, but as the sun goes down, it can get very chilly. So if you need to be more warm, please help yourself. Okay? So let's start with a prayer. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, our beloved Gurudeva, Paramahansa Yogananda, Saints of all religions, beloved Swamiji, we humbly bow before you all. Divine Mother, Great Masters, we come before you tonight with great gratitude, with reverence, and with deep devotion. Guide us throughout the evening, that we feel ever more deeply attuned to your inward presence. Help us to remove all obstacles that keep us from knowing that our self-realization is already achieved and that we are one with you. Om, peace. Amen.
Please join us in singing Blessed.
Blessed, blessed, the life that is given to God. Blessed, blessed, the ways where his feet have trod. All the joys that human heart can know, may his love on you bestow. From your path be moved, all delusion by his truth disproved. Blessed, blessed, the life that is given to God. Blessed, blessed. the heart open to His love. Blessed, blessed, the light that shines from above. All the wealth for which man ever schemed, all the beauty ever dreamed, all the gains for which men sigh and moan, will be harvested in God alone. Blessed, blessed, the heart open to His love.
I was thinking that it's wonderful that we're starting with Swami Kriyananda as our first stop on our pilgrimage with the gurus, because he was such an excellent example, perfect example of discipleship. In fact, I think the many things we can think about his lifetime, the thing I find most helpful is that he was such a wonderful example of how we can live our lives, live in a world that's very busy, has great demands on us. We're not off secreted in some cave in the Himalayas. We're actually in the world, but not of it, as Master said. And he gave us teaching on how to do that and an example of how to do that effectively. I was actually thinking that this was probably about 5 years before he passed, just as a good example of how he would often work with us. A number of us had taken him to the airport. He was off returning to Italy. He'd had some health scares, and so as his physician, I was helping him get everything finalized. He was healthy. He was ready to go on this trip. I was actually a little relieved to put him on the plane because it was a near thing right up to that point. And there were probably 30 of us in the terminal at the airport standing with him. He was in his wheelchair getting ready to get taken on. And there was kind of a quiet moment in the whole conversation, and sort of out of nowhere, Davy asked me in front of the whole group, she said, "Peter, if you'd known how difficult it was going to be to do the kind of medical practice that you did here out in rural Ananda and all the things you've dealt with, would you still be willing to do it?" Which I thought was kind of an interesting question. And, you know, here was this whole group. We were getting ready to put Swami in the plane. So I kind of opted for a true answer that was a little humorous. I said, "Well, I'm kind of glad I didn't know that it was going to be this challenging." And everybody had a good laugh.
When we consider the life of Swami Sri Yukteswar, the obvious and primary association is to that of Jnana Yoga, the path of wisdom and discernment. And that's because Swami Sri Yukteswar is always described as being austere, as being stern, and as Lahari pointed out in her talk just a few minutes ago, having a harshness of rebuke and reprimand when dealing with his disciples. We see this often in Autobiography of a Yogi. Yogananda tells us many stories where Sri Yukteswar scolds him or chastises him or teaches him a lesson. When Yogananda first meets Sri Yukteswar and asks him to tell three stories from his childhood, Yukteswar replies that he will, but each of the stories has a moral or a lesson. Because everything that Sri Yukteswar did when interacting with his disciples was about progressing their spiritual growth. There was never a moment to lose. Everything was about the search for God. And while the path of Jnana Yoga is absolutely important and an essential part of the conversation of Swami Sri Yukteswar, it's a disservice to both him and to all of us if that's where we leave it and we don't look beyond just that austerity. Because just behind that veil lies a man whose heart was deeply rooted in divine love and devotion. Sri Yukteswar is the avatar who offered us the lesson that we cannot take one step on the spiritual path without devotion. When Yogananda first describes Sri Yukteswar, he describes him as having an oceanic heart. And when Yogananda offers him his eternal love, Sri Yukteswar replies to Yogananda that divine love is without boundary, without condition, and without change. And he goes on to say that the flux of the human heart can be tamed only through pure love. So what does this mean? This means that when we're looking at the life of Sri Yukteswar, what we can see is a life of perfect balance, not just that of Jnana Yoga, not just that of Bhakti Yoga of the heart, or not just that of Karma Yoga. We hear often the stories in autobiography when Sri Yukteswar is described as doing the laundry or cooking and cleaning when needed. And then, of course, we all know the story of Yogananda's first experience with cosmic consciousness, with samadhi, and the response that Sri Yukteswar gives after that experience is, "Come, let us sweep the balcony floor, and then take a walk by the Ganges." This balance is the lesson that Swami Sri Yukteswar can teach to us, because balance is what we're all seeking. And the place that we find that balance, and the reason that Swami Sri Yukteswar is so discerning and austere and so steadfast in his teachings and often strict and harsh, is because when we can withdraw into the deepest part of our spine, and when we can live in the knowing that God is the only reality, all that exists is love. And to find that love, we have to work with everything that we have in us in order to earn that. Swami Sri Yukteswar doesn't teach us our lessons easily. I had that experience just a few days ago. I was here cleaning the shrine, and I had my broom and my bucket of soapy water, and I got started. About an hour into the process, I was getting restless with the endless supply of cobwebs and critters that were living here, and I was getting more and more frustrated. Looking up at this Murti, which, as Shanti pointed out at the beginning of the evening, is alive with the vibration of our masters, I knew that I couldn't get angry. So instead, I switched jobs, and I decided to give him a bath. And in the midst of that, as I was washing him and getting into every nook and cranny of his robe and his eyes and his ears and his hair and just speaking with him and talking to him and being that close to the Murti, all I could feel was joy and love. And my heart was softened. And then, of course, I got back to work and thinking of, "Come, let us sweep the balcony floor," I picked up my broom. And so I want to end just by talking a little bit about the way that Yogananda describes Sri Yukteswar to us. In the AY, one of the descriptions he gives us is that Sri Yukteswar had his feet firmly grounded in the earth, but his heart in the haven of heaven. And this, to me, is the perfect example of balance. It's what we're all seeking. And the way to find that is by going inside, by finding God, through steadfast devotion, unconditional willpower. So we've all had the experience, I assume, of looking at the image of Sri Yukteswar and feeling that harsh rebuke that Master often talks about. But I invite you to look again at the Murti, at the images that you see here, or the next time you're walking past your altar, or you're walking through the church and the temple and the Sangha, and you see that harsh rebuke. Just stop for a moment, take a deep breath, and look just a moment longer. Feel the infinite joy and power and wisdom that permeates from that image. And that when you seek God and you live only for God, there is nothing but joy.
Lotus feet Feel free to join me on the refrain of the song, God, God, God. From the depths of slumber as I ascend, the spiral stairway of wakefulness, I will whisper, whisper, God, God. God.
the food and when I break my fast of nightly separation from thee, I will taste thee and mentally say, God, God, God. No matter where I go, the spotlight of my mind will ever keep turning on thee. And in the battle din of activity, my silent war cry will be, God, God, God. When boisterous storms of trials shriek, and when worries howl at me, I will drown their noises loudly chanting, God, God, God. When my mind weaves dreams, dreams with threads of memories, on that magic cloth will I emboss, God, God, God. Every night in time of deepest sleep, will peace dreams and calls joy, joy. My joy comes singing evermore, God, God, God. In waking, eating, working, dreaming, sleeping, serving, meditating, chanting, divinely loving, my soul will constantly hum, unheard by any, God, 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 God.
As the evenings progressed, I'm just finding it, how can I say this? I'm having such a profound experience of the absolute, utter rightness, perfection, clarity of this whole path. And just how perfect it is that we're all here right now. I mean, every one of us, and specifically each one of us, whoever we are, that we started hours ago with Jesus appearing to the great master Babaji. And literally we know that happened in whatever form it is, some unimaginable way to us, that they came together and in a moment they knew that it was time for a great being of light to descend. And there's Babaji, who is so ethereal and yet also so real, and he's managed to touch in such a profound way every master on this path, and each in the perfect way for them, calling Lahiri to him, materializing a palace so Lahiri could just be done with all karma, and yet sending him back, knowing hundreds of years later how important it would be that Lahiri was a householder. And, you know, at some point finding Sri Yukteswar and sort of being a little stern with him and saying, I was nearly extinguished into the ether by your restless thoughts. This is to Yukteswar, you know, when that was important. And coming right to Master and saying, you will go to the West. This is what you'll need to do. And the road will be open to you. They'll be waiting for you. People will be there. They will love you. They will hear you. You just think about the impossibility of it all. Lahiri levitating so that his wife realizes, this is not a regular husband I have here. I have to actually rethink everything I've thought was true about life. All of these stories, Sri Yukteswar, and listening to when Caitlin said, every single interaction that he had with all of his disciples, everyone had a spiritual lesson behind it. Everyone. I feel such extraordinary gratitude. Lahiri said it earlier, but you can't help it. You come here in front of Master and honestly Swamiji, who's so close and who never for a moment after he picked up that book looked anywhere but right into Master's eyes, wherever he was, dedicating an entire lifetime, moment by moment by moment, joyfully, exuberantly, lovingly, with amazing clarity, just to make sure that every one of us would be able to find our way. And for Master, from a life of infinite joy and freedom in God, willingly to embrace limitation, pain, and death. How could we ever feel any more love? There's no logic to what's happening here tonight, to the stories that we're telling. It cannot make any sense, and yet it's all so perfectly, utterly true. And that we're here tonight is just the next moment in the perfection of all of this. You know, I'm looking at these shrines, and I'm saying to myself, and I'll share this with you because I bet some of you are too, are these shrines getting just to be more beautiful year by year? Or am I being carried along on this path in such a way that we are being given eyes to see astral beauty in a way that we couldn't last year or the year before that, that we're becoming part of this framework, framework's too harsh of a word because there's no frame, but part of this huge reality that just is carried on into infinity. It's so much a part. It's infinite and it's infinitesimal. Our lives are being affected day by day, and yet we're part of all of this. And this was all known. It seems like forever ago when I was saying, we've known these masters a very long time. This is not our first time around with them. You know, some years ago I started having this inkling. I mean, I have no memory. I don't know anything about past lives. I feel very simple about all of this. But I started thinking that when Jesus lived, that I was a very little girl. and that I could have a vague memory, you know, it was out here somewhere, that I used to try and tug on his robe or look up at him with great love. And those thoughts kept coming back to me. And then one day I said to myself, of course you remember that. Everybody on this path remembers that. Everybody on this path, we had to have been around. If not right then, we've known Jesus. We've known Babaji. We are not just first setting foot on this path. This is too profound. Yesterday I listened. I thought it would be just for fun that I would listen to some of Treasure's talks of Swamiji's life with Master. I didn't think it would have anything to do with my talk here at Master. I didn't really know what this would be, but I've listened to those talks many times, so I know Swamiji just tells story after story, and they're so much fun, and they're so amazing. But as I listened to them, and I heard Swamiji say over and over, he was everything. He was funny. He was loving. He was compassionate. He was powerful. He performed miracles, but the miracles were never what happened. It was always about the inspiration. And Swamiji said about Master, just what Caitlin was saying about Yukteswar, behind everything, if he was shooting a water pistol at you, if he was throwing spitballs at you, if he was sitting you down and telling you in no uncertain terms what you knew then to be the most important spiritual message you had ever received, it was always about your soul's well-being. He never forgot for a moment. None of these masters did. That's what we're hearing. They love us so much. They never for an instant drop what we need. There's never a mistaken moment about where our lives are, where we're sitting, when, what we're saying, who we're with, because they have their eye on us and they have their arms around us. And that's what Swamiji kept saying. You know, Swamiji, at the end of the path, he talks about Master's last days and hours and about Master's passing, of course. And there's such a beautiful story in there about Tara. I think it's Tara. Tara Mata. When Master passed and she was standing there staring at Master's body, she just suddenly said to whoever was around, I can't imagine how many thousands of years it took to make a face look like that, to be that beautiful. And you, when I read that, I've read it before, but it just took me into thousands of years, thousands of lifetimes, my own lifetime, the thoughts of how we're all being sculpted by these beautiful masters, lovingly sculpted. Sri Yukteswar said to Master, divine power will flow through your eyes, and it will draw people away from their material desires into God consciousness. He told him that before he came. How many times have we looked into Master's eyes? You look at any one of these pictures, you can just get lost in his eyes. Even through a picture. We've never met him, but really make no mistake, it doesn't matter. He is here with us. Swamiji brought him. We wanted to hear it. It was our karma, this great good karma, to be incarnated right now and to feel this beautiful master and that divine power coming through his eyes. Jyotish has told us so many times, sit and meditate on Master's eyes. When I heard that, Sri Yukteswar said that to him, it made such perfect sense to me. We're being given an opportunity here with all of them, with Master, to dive as deep into infinity, to expand as much into infinity right now in this lifetime as we choose, because they have their arms around us, because Master is not letting go of us for even a moment. The minute we make a decision to turn to him, Master said, we all know this, he said, when I am gone, only love can take my place. You know, I've heard that for decades. We all have. I've probably heard it for lifetimes, but I only remember it for decades. I remember when I had no idea what it meant. Then I remember not that long ago when I started getting an inkling, a little bit of a feeling. But now I know what he's saying to us, and I was saying it about the second coming of Christ. It's the same thing. They're the same. They're one and the same. That love that can only take his place is in our hearts. We have to offer that to him all the time in as many ways as we can. We have to offer it up for purification. That's the only thing that's going to take his place, because that's how we will open to that astral form that we are meant to be, that is absolute pure love. When Caitlin told me the other day that she had given Sri Yukteswar a bath, and she told me that story that she told all of you, it touched me so deeply. Oh my God, you washed him, you bathed him, you touched his feet, you took cobwebs off of him. Now that will open your heart. And it made me want to come out here and start cleaning all of these masters. I was like, why had I never thought of that? How could I never have thought of it? What joy. What absolute joy. You know, I can't remember the line right now. This story came in a few minutes ago, and I was trying to get ahead of myself. And maybe somebody else will remember it. But, you know, Sister Gyanamata, who we all know, was such a highly evolved, the most highly evolved female disciple of Master. And somebody wrote to her once and told her that they had had an image of her in a previous life. They saw who she was. And she forwarded that letter to Master. And she said, no matter who I was in any other life, she said, what I am now, I am Gyanamata. That's a name he had given her. I am a disciple of Yogananda. And all I want is to be as perfect in that role, the most perfect disciple that I can be. And then her last line in that, which is what I can't remember, but she said something like, just feel the ecstasy of it, even if I'm sure the words are not right. But she said, but never enough. Oh, never enough. Like, how could I give as much as I want to give? How could I hold all of this love? How could I even offer it up for purification in the fire of such love and devotion as these masters feel for us, every one of them? Peter was right. Swamiji is such a beautiful example of this. Such a beautiful example. For all the years that we were around that man, can anybody say they ever saw him living anywhere other than in the consciousness of his guru? Never. Not a word came out of his mouth that didn't go right back to his guru. Not a meditation that wasn't offered to him. That's what we need to learn. That's what we need to learn. Recently, I sent a note out because our temple was getting a little messy. People leave coffee cups, water bottles, pencils, papers, erasers. Then we come in and we sit down for service, and it's all up there. And some of us are thinking, oh, dear. And so I sent a little note. Can we all start paying attention? And today, as I was sitting with this, I thought to myself, what a joy it will be to go and pick up a pencil and a piece of paper and to remove a water bottle, because we're cleaning this home for our great master. We would say to ourselves, how would I behave right now if Master were here, or if Swami were here? Because of course they are. They're right here all the time. Our self-realization is already achieved. All we need to do is remember. All we need to do is know it. All we need to do is let go of everything that's not our pure, astral, energetic, pure love form. And all they want to do is help us. I'd like to close by reading you a letter that Swamiji read in one of his talks. I very quickly transcribed it because it speaks so beautifully to Master's, well, you'll hear in this letter, Master's teaching us. But in that teaching, what we get to feel, the love, the care, the devotion, the presence of this great soul in our life. Let me just read his words to you. I love that flower, so it's fine that it grabbed me. This is a letter he wrote to a disciple. You must never lose courage. Divine Mother sent me to pilot you out of the clouds of your mind. Everybody's difficulties are different, and everyone has to win that test of karma in Divine Mother. Overcome all by constant inward calling on God in utmost devotion, in words, in thoughts, in actions, and in obedience to Guru. Your troubles, I do not mind. I will never give up my job about you. It is better to conquer one evil and not live with it forever. Never for a moment identify yourself with momentary flashes of error. Have no fear. Even though I am gone from your visible eyes, you will never be alone. I may not scold you then, but I shall ever be with you and through Divine Mother guard you from all harm and will constantly whisper to you guidance through your loving self. So do not become discouraged and tired, but ever be interested in working for Divine Mother. No matter if war, sickness, and death dance around you, that is the secret victory over delusion and all troubles. Be cut to pieces, but never give up. Be like the divine leech, suck at the blood of wisdom, even though torn to bits. A smooth life is not a victorious life, and I will give you lots of my good karma so you will get through. I will not only forgive you, but I will lift you up no matter how many times you fall. Keep unceasingly trying to conquer. Not only will I invisibly help you, but visibly through many disciples here. I am not building a mansion for you to give you riches that will perish, but I am making an imperishable home with all riches in my Divine Mother's mansion. We have an obligation. We have a divine or holy obligation to do our best as people whose eyes have been opened, ears have been opened, we've been helped this far, to work as hard as we can on our own self-realization. And by doing that, by serving others, we get further along on our path, we help others on their path, we pass on in every way we can everything that these great masters, that this great master is bringing to us, as you hear, silently, not in a body, but always with us, always, never doubt it. Master is never, he's only as far away as our consciousness allows him to be.
Cold and peaceful, all cares are his master's voice I hear in all pervading silence. He whispers, I am here. My heart with joy is flowing. It sings eternally.
Please join us in O Master.
Storms above the plain, a land where peace.
and laughter ring. O Master, may thy joy fill our days. O Master, may thy wisdom guide our ways.
Guide all our hopes and all our dreams, past every glow that only seems, into the light, the inner sun, into that truth that we're all one. Help us to find in every hour, in every thought, in every glow, a joy that spans eternity, the truth that makes us ever free. May thy joy fill our days. O Master, may thy wisdom guide our ways. O Master, may thy joy fill our days.
Let's close with a prayer. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, our beloved Guru Deva, Paramahansa Yogananda, saints of all religions, beloved Swamiji, we humbly bow before all of you. May thy love shine forever on the sanctuary of our devotion. And may we be able to awaken thy love in all hearts. Om peace. Amen.
We talked about some other things, and I was wheeling Swami onto the plane. It was just Swami and myself. I was taking him down the jetway onto the plane, and this was probably 30 minutes later, so quite a bit of time had passed, and at one point, he kind of turned around as I was pushing him along, and he said, "You know, Peter, that was not a very good answer that you gave to David's question." And really what he was getting at me about was comportment, and that we're representatives of Master, and I should have answered the way he would have answered. Well, of course I would have done that, and if it had been even harder and I had known that, I still would have done it, because this is what the Guru had asked of me. I remember another time, this was actually not very long after I had come to Ananda, probably in the early 1980s. I'd probably been there about 5 years. And one thing I had often wondered about was what it had been like for Swami living with Yogananda, where Yogananda knew your every thought, every intention, every desire that sort of passed through your mind, and was pretty willing to talk to you about it if you happened to be around. And once I actually was alone with him, we'd been doing some medical thing, and I was all done, had a moment just to ask him a question. I said, wasn't that very difficult? In fact, I think the way I asked him was, how did you do that? To be around someone who knew your every thought, every intention, every desire that you had right in that moment, and would be kind of instantaneous feedback on that. And he said, well, I wanted to be better. And so I was willing to open myself to that. There was a real sense of you have to make that self-effort to open yourself to that. But I was very happy to get the feedback. He went on to say, though, he said, you know, in all the years that people have asked me about Master, very often they will ask me, what was Master like and what was it like being in the hermitage? But hardly anybody ever asks me about that. And I think that is actually a pretty crucial point, is to be around a master like Yogananda, discipleship involves opening yourself in such a profound way that you invite the master in for change and transformation. So I think in our first stop in our pilgrimage here tonight, we have the quintessential disciple, the example of master's teachings in this age in living form, and he's here for us. So this will be our first stop.
Today my mind has mercy, I will find fault with my diving. I will find fault with thy diving. Today my mind has dived deep in thee. Today my mind has dived deep in thee. Today my mind has dived deep in thee. Today my mind has dived deep in thee.
Each of these shrines is so utterly exquisite. You just feel the energy that people have been pouring into them for 2 days. And it seems almost that the masters just stepped up and said, yes. And I was just looking at this beautiful heart, and there was an insect, and I thought, what an exquisite insect. And it turns out it's a wasp. It's a really beautiful wasp. So many times over the years that I've been with Ananda, people have expressed surprise and a little bit of wonder about the fact that Jesus is on our altar. To so many people, it looks like one Western face in the midst of all of these Indians. Although, interestingly, I was reading a large article that Master wrote about Jesus bringing East and West together, and he keeps describing him in that article as somebody who was born in the Orient. I actually had to look up Orient to make sure, but in fact it does just mean the East, so I couldn't quite make it make sense, but Master kept saying, no, he's a perfect example, born in the Orient and then came to teach in the West. But to many people, he looks like a Westerner, and the rest of our lineage here are obviously, at least people who are born in this lifetime, in India. But we're not surprised. Those of us who have been on this path for any period of time are not surprised. We hear every week in the festival, Jesus appeared to Babaji. The lights on the high altar, he said, are growing dim. And we just hear from the first time we walk into our temple, we hear this way that Jesus and Babaji came together. It doesn't make any sense, of course, to most people at first, because when you start looking at the dates, that sure doesn't work. So you have to really move into another whole realm of understanding anything. But most of us have done that. We realize that for these great free masters who are living outside of their bodies and outside of any of the confines of time and space, that they are just constantly together. They always were, they always will be, they are now. There was no was and will be. It's just in the moment. And we hear a prayer of love went up from earth, and you responded. And we know that this whole great line of masters responded and came down, and that Jesus is very much a part of this family. Master describes in great length in several places about what happens with these great souls as they begin to evolve to this perfected state. And he said that they develop a gravitational pull one by one, not outside, not pulling on us, but a pull, P-U-L-L, that allows them to remember teachings from the last life, who they are, and the pull of that, of the greatness of the teachings, of them incorporating it into their being, of becoming that, just gets stronger and stronger and stronger. He said, until there's so much light, he says, they become a star. And that's what he calls them, each of them a star. And then each of those stars start reaching out to other stars, and these spiritual families are created, and we are a part of this great spiritual family. We were drawn to this path through any one of these masters. Maybe some of us know, maybe we don't, but even this family that Master's a part of now, this great spiritual family with all of this spiritual energy that includes Jesus Christ, Babaji, Krishna. That's part of the family, and we're part of it. And we've been with them many times before. This is not the first time that we're here. So we, in some ways, part of why we're drawn here is because we recognize them. We know that these are our teachers. Again, it's not the first time. It might take us a little time in this life to wake up to it. But this is going to be a very flowery speech, I think. Okay. I'm not sure what's happening. But anyway, Master was writing somewhere about visions that he's had of Jesus, various visions, various times, not visions, but visitations when Jesus has come to him, really, again, alluding to this family. And he tells a story of being in Boston one time, and he said he had gotten to be so busy, now listen to this and let's see how many of us can relate to this, that he was so busy in the work that he was doing that he was feeling that he was not having enough time to go deep with God. This is how he spoke, obviously speaking to those of us with this dilemma. He said, so he just said to God one day, he was in a meditation, and he said, I'm done. I am not going to do your work anymore. I do not want to stay in America. Unless you come to me and tell me right now, you come yourself and you show me. Otherwise, he literally said, I'm out of here. And he said, suddenly he hears this great voice, and the voice says, you cannot leave. What do you want? And Master says, I want to see Jesus Christ and Krishna walking on a sea of gold with their disciples coming toward me. He said, before his words were out, almost as if when it was a thought, there was Jesus, just like he had just always been there, and Krishna walking towards him. So he said to himself, I'm hallucinating. And he said, okay, if the person next to me has this same vision, I'll believe it. And just then, the man who was meditating next to him said, oh, I see Jesus and Krishna. And then Master says, this must just be a power of my thought. He was, had, after all, been a pretty powerful man. Master's telling the story himself. And just then, this voice spoke to him and said, you're doubting too much. He said, when the meditation is over, and I, he said, when I leave, and these great masters leave, he said, I will leave with the fragrance of a lotus in the room, and you will know it is me. And Master said that for hours after that, everybody who walked into the room just said, what is that beautiful smell? It smells like a lotus in here. But what Master, who Master reached for when he wanted Divine Mother to prove something to him, when he needed to see something, he reached for those great souls, those great beings who were always with him. He reached for Jesus. He reached, of course, for Krishna, Babaji, the same soul. So this is our path. We don't think about Jesus and wonder about his teachings. Master called, as we all know, the way many Christians hold it, many Christian churches, he called it churchianity, meaning however these people have interpreted these teachings. And I think these are many well-intentioned beings, but they haven't had an experience of Christ. But we know, because at least we know, because Master is telling us, because Swamiji has told us after Master, that Jesus is fully self-realized, that he is a self-realizationist, really, that there's no difference at all between his teachings and our teachings. And of course, Master and then Swamiji have gone to great lengths to show us that, to show us that every teaching in the Bible has a corollary in the Gita, that we can read almost any stanza, and that the teachings are exactly the same, that Jesus is a true revelation of the divine. Now, Jesus himself, interestingly, talks about, in an article that Master wrote in 1939, and I have to say, he's writing it as if he's quoting Jesus. And just to show you how much we're all trapped in these minds, I'm saying to myself, now how could he be quoting Jesus? Thinking of when they lived. It's so easy to go down that road. And then I said, Shanti, he's always talking to Jesus. He could quote anything. But Jesus explains, and these are in Jesus' words according to Master, that while all masters are equal, each master is called at a different time for a different reason, a very specific reason. And Jesus said that before he was called, he said the earth was burdened by sin. That's the way he talks. And he said, I was called by the Heavenly Father, these are his words, to shepherd these bewildered sheep. That's how he spoke about the Jewish people then, the Israelis. He calls them the Israelites. And I was called then, so I came specifically then, not now. Master, of course, we all know, came now because he was here with this great work to really guide humankind in this moment, in this age of energy. And we'll talk more about that when we talk about Master. But Jesus and Master together say, but make no mistake about this, that Jesus is a, Master said he's one of the greatest saviors that ever walked on earth. And Master himself saying to anyone who could receive him, in other words, the people who were spiritually mature enough that could open to him and hear his teachings, that he had within him the power to take these people to be their salvation. This is Master speaking about Jesus. There's that wonderful line from the Bible where Jesus himself said, I can't quote it now, but he said, I'm here and I'm knocking. I'm knocking at your door. For anybody who hears, if you open the door, he says, I will enter and sup with you. And I just think it's so beautiful. He's saying, let me in. If you let me in, I can come and I can save you. I can, and what does save you mean? Save you means I can open your heart. I can give you an experience of super consciousness, which really is, in essence, what is the second coming of Christ? The second coming of Christ is Christ being reborn in every one of our hearts. That's what it is. It's us being able to realize in our own hearts what Christ's super consciousness was, what that pure love was. And Christ says over and over, and Master says, the second coming of Christ is something that every soul will realize eventually. That we're here to allow Christ to live again and again and again as each of us awaken in his light. Christ is, we hold Christ on this path much more as the Father. I think that was his language, that was his way, even in that phrase that I just said to you when he said, the Heavenly Father brought me down when the earth was filled with sin. Those words, they're not words that Master would use. But if we look at Jesus and we look at his life, he had every one of the same divine qualities because he was the divine. He was courageous. He could have saved his life over and over, but he didn't. He had a job to do, and he did it. He was so compassionate. He's being crucified, and his first thought, "Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do." He was endlessly loving. He says at one point that he was brought to save or to help guide the Israelites and not anyone else. There was a very specific purpose to his coming. And there's a story where there was a woman who came up and just grabbed Jesus and was saying to Jesus that her daughter had a serious, what sounded like a psychiatric illness. And at first, the Bible says Jesus really paid her no mind. But in the end, even though he knew that she was not specifically his, he said to his disciple who was near him, "No, I was drawn for a very specific purpose." But then he couldn't leave without healing the daughter. Such extraordinary love and compassion and generosity and caring, even though we hold it more like the Father on our path. But all of those same qualities that we'll see as we move around, as we move through these shrines, as we experience each of our masters, even though we'll find particular qualities, that as the divine manifests, as it did so purely through Jesus, that we could find any one of these spiritual qualities in him and realize that same quality through him in ourselves. And again, it is exactly what each of us will need to do. Allow Christ to come through us as we move further down our own spiritual path toward our own freedom, toward our own freedom in God.
What?
Heard thy name, the blind told. Now we will make like a little jump. Can one hear? No. Can you? Yeah, now it's working. Before we begin to focus on Babaji, close a moment your eyes with a straight spine. Going beyond the physical realms. Babaji is Ishvara himself, the eternal light, the eternal consciousness of Krishna, manifested in that immortal form. And as you well remember, try to be free of thoughts. Try to be free of any desires for a moment. silently calling upon Babaji. With deepest love and devotion, calling his name, his consciousness is permeating every atom of creation, his presence permeating every atom. He is here in the subtle form. He can be more here when there is no thought, when there is only stillness and openness and deepest love. For a moment, allow only one thought in your mind. Babaji. Call upon him in stillness. He is the father of Kriya Yoga. Babaji has given throughout eons, throughout times, the sacred teachings and techniques to many, many great souls, to Adi Shankaracharya, to Kabir, all those great ones, to Jesus, as Master said, the three wise men who came to give honor to the birth of Christ, of Jesus the Christ. There were Babaji, Lahiriji, and Sri Yukteswarji. And again, it is Babaji who gave these ancient techniques through which we can realize the divine, our oneness, through which we can remember. Remembrance of who we truly are, techniques through which we can learn to go beyond this ocean of illusion, to go to that subtle presence. As Sri Yukteswarji has himself realized, as soon as there is any thought, any emotion, any movement, Babaji cannot be here. It has to be total stillness in your heart, in your mind, in your whole being. Where earthly thoughts don't dare to enter, where the physical breath stops to breathe, to flow, there Babaji comes and will be always present and guiding. More you can go into that stillness, more you will feel his divine presence, his guidance, wherever you are. Search for stillness. Search for non-moving inside and outside. Babaji's form, most luminous, beautiful form, like nothing else in this creation. His body, luminous like the brilliant light. He is wandering from one peak to the other in his form, blessing those few ones to see him, especially in the Himalayas. As here, we are in this moment, travel with your consciousness into the higher realms of the Himalayas inside your own self. And as his disciples, when they gather together, can you let go of everything to be with him? Like that disciple who was yearning, wandering to the Himalayan mountains to find him. And finally, by his grace, he came to Babaji. And
ask him to be his disciple. But what did Babaji say? You are not yet ready to be with me. In that moment, that soul, that disciple, there was no meaning of life for him anymore. And he said, if I cannot be with you, this life has no worth to live. And he threw himself down the mountain, scattering his physical form out of love. And when Babaji said to his little fuse to go and bring his body to him, he touched him gently. Feel his touch as this disciple giving up everything and being resurrected again in his light. And he brought him back to life. Smilingly, when he opened his eyes, telling, now you are ready to be my disciple. Now you are ready because you have overcome death. You have overcome the illusion of the body. And as he always said, Dera Danda Utaho. And they break up again, going sometimes on the astral way from one peak to the other in the sacred Himalayas, or sometimes wandering and blessing this earth. When Babaji again in this new era was calling his disciple, his foremost disciple, to which grace we all are here and that we all can receive Kriya. When he called him in the Dronagiri mountain, very sacred mountain, since ancient times, filled with sages and spiritual scientists, not looking for the earthly things, but looking within. There he called Lahiri, his disciple, to come. And again, through his touch, remembering, helping him to remember all the times together, the veil of illusion taking away. And lo, Lahiriji had still a little desire, material desire, of a beautiful palace, to live in a beautiful palace. One little earthly desire. And Babaji, as he is one with the cosmic creator, he is one with that infinite consciousness which creates everything and everyone. He created the most amazing palace in just a flash. And in that precious palace, in the Dronagiri Mountains, Lahiri received again the ancient techniques of Kriya, which he has given on throughout different paths of Kriya, throughout this path of Kriya, where Lahiriji, a few days before, a very saintly soul, but not aware who he was, entered in the state for 7 days, in the state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Incredible bliss, incredible oneness with the cosmic beloved, with the infinite. And after that, oh, beloved Master, let me be here with you in the Himalayas. Don't send me back. And what did Babaji tell then Lahiriji?
You came in this life to live the life of a householder, to be an example, to live in this world but not be of this world, to live in the world but always in oneness with God, in oneness with the divine. And so he sent him back, but with the promise that any time he calls him, he needs him, he will come. At the same, in the same way, every time we call Babaji to help us, to focus, to concentrate, to help us with the techniques, to help us to go beyond, dedicating ourselves more and more, he will come. He will be always with us. He is our Father. He is the Father of Kriya Yoga since eternity. And then, when he came to Sri Yukteswar, a very skeptical Sri Yukteswar, if you well remember in Allahabad, I was sitting on the tree, the banyan tree, when I went to Allahabad. Oh, what a joyful feeling. I still can feel Babaji's presence there when I was there. And like Sri Yukteswarji, he's looking at all these dirty sadhus and renunciates, criticizing them and saying, probably how much better are the Western scientists compared to these beggars? And Babaji called him, helping him to understand that in everyone, also in all the souls, is the divine spark, is his presence. Helping him through his longing to help to unite East and West. And he called him a Swami, even when he wasn't yet officially a Swami. But he called him a Swami because his consciousness inside was already a Swami, a great master of wisdom, of jnana. And then Babaji, very soon, on the 25th of July, Babaji appeared to Master when Master was desperate, not sure to follow the call to go to America. He was calling up in God, for a moment scared to come to the West, to the world of material success. He was crying and calling, and there was a knocking on his door in Fort Gapa Road in Kolkata. Beautiful place if you can go there. It's so deep and you still can feel that sacred moment. And there was a knocking on the door, a gentle knocking. And Yoganandaji opened. At this time he still was, no, he was already Yogananda, Swami Yogananda. And he opened his door and there he stood. His Sadguru since ancient times. His Guru as Krishna when Yogananda was Arjuna. His Guru as Narayana when he was Narada. This ancient connection, there he was again, the first time in this life, Babaji in front of him. And what did Yoganandaji say? Oh, please let me be with you. Don't send me away.
don't let me go. And Babaji said, our Heavenly Father has sent me to you to tell you to go. There are many souls waiting for the sacred teachings. Many souls are calling in the West to be awakened again. And so, still not convinced, he wanted to cling to Babaji and follow Babaji. And Babaji froze, Master, and he couldn't move. And he left. He left in the physical form, but he always stayed with him. Babaji came with Master, when Master came here in the West, always guiding him, always with him, shedding his light through Master to all thirsty souls whom Master met. He is the light, he is Ishvara, eternally there for us. Also, when one day Babaji thought of leaving, of dissolving finally back into his ocean, but there was his sister, Mataji, who became the instrument. And of that special moment when Ram Gopal Musamba, very advanced disciple of Lahiriji, became the witness in Dasasasmet Ghat in Varanasi, another incredible divine place. There, Babaji gave the promise that he will stay in that mortal form, in that form, or immortal form, for all this, one can say, era until the world, until existence and creation gets again dissolved into the infinite. So he is immortal in the form, but above all in consciousness, that his sacred form can manifest, because it's so pure, it's so subtle, it's pure divine light. Everything has to be still. Even a little desire, even one thought, catapults Babaji back into the cosmic plane. So more that we practice with deepest love and devotion, more that we practice stillness, deep stillness, silence, more we will feel his incredible presence and his light.
Spirit, I am he. Beyond dolphins, he formless am I. Beyond dolphins, he formless am I. Free from dreams of all earthly life. Free from dreams of all earthly life. I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. Fear not, I'm free in thy joy. Bondage, I fear not, I'm free in thy joy. Free, oh free, Lord, free in thy bliss. Free, oh free, Lord, free in thy bliss. I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. No birth, no death, no cast have I. No birth, no death, no cast have I. Father, mother, have I none. Father, mother, have I none. I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. Mind nor intellect nor ego feeling. Mind nor intellect nor ego feeling. Sky nor earth nor metals am I. Sky nor earth nor metals am I. I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. Beyond all fancy, formless am I. Beyond all fancy, formless am I. Free from dreams of all earthly life. Free from dreams of all earthly life. I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. Bondage I fear not, I'm free in thy joy. Bondage I fear not, I'm free in thy joy. Free, oh free, Lord, free in thy bliss. Free, oh free, Lord, free in thy bliss. I am free, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. No birth, no death, no cast have I. No birth, no death, no cast have I. Father, mother, have I none. Father, mother, have I none. I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. Mind nor intellect nor ego feeling. Mind nor intellect nor ego feeling. Sky nor earth nor metals am I. Sky nor earth nor metals am I. I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. Beyond all fancy, formless am I. Beyond all fancy, formless am I. Free from dreams of all earthly life. Free from dreams of all earthly life. I am he, blessed spirit, I am he.
blessed spirit, I am he. Bondage I fear not, I'm free in thy joy. Bondage I fear not, I'm free in thy joy. Free, oh free, Lord, free in thy bliss. Free, oh free, Lord, free in thy bliss. I am he, I am me, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. Oh, I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. Oh, I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am he. I am he, I am he, blessed spirit, I am
he. Through many lives I've drunk the cup of laughter. No man could tell the pleasures I have known. The stars in the endless sky, if one could count, would come to billions. Yet as vast as are their numbers, so many years I wandered far from you. Yet as vast as are their numbers, so many years I wandered far from you. Through many lives I've drunk the cup of sorrow. No man could tell the bitter tears I've shed. The drops in the endless sea, if one could count, would come to billions. Yet as vast as are their numbers, so many years I wandered far from you. Yet as vast as are their numbers, so many years I wandered far from you. Through countless lives I've sought your cup of sweetness. Found other cups, but thirsted evermore. The streams in the hills of time all found their way into a desert. Every noon of bright fulfillment, ere many hours did sink to evening gloom. Every noon of bright fulfillment, ere many hours did sink to evening gloom. I long for you in summer and in winter, only for
night, Thursday and night. I've known that the sweetest songs ears ever heard were but your echo. Lord, at last fill me completely, for nevermore I'd wander far from you. Lord, at last fill me completely, for nevermore I'd wander far from you.
It's hard to leave the Himalayas. But on our pilgrimage, we do leave the Himalayas, where we've been with the timeless and peerless essence of the light that is Babaji's consciousness. And we go to his disciple, who is one of our heroes, right? Here we are. We may get to visit the Himalayas. Some of us do. I haven't yet heard of anyone who's actually seen Babaji, although it can happen, and it does happen. But for us, here, living in Silicon Valley, having families and jobs and responsibilities, Lahiri Mahasaya is a great hero because he has served as a bridge. It takes a lot of willingness and strength to be a bridge. So he went up to the Himalayas and he received from Babaji that amazing state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi and had it for 7 days. And I think of that saying in the festival we do every week, greater can no love be than this, from a life of infinite joy and freedom in God, willingly to embrace limitation, pain, and death for the salvation of mankind. And our masters have all done that. And Lahiri Mahasaya just particularly touches my heart, because in that life, 33 years, he was raising his family, doing the things that all people do, being a very high soul, a very wonderful spiritual person with a Brahmin lifestyle, a very high spiritual lifestyle, came from a family, parents who were also very spiritually inclined. So he had all of that, and then at age 33, there he is working in a government office, and he gets a call to go to the foot of a mountain, Raniket, and he has a lot of time on his hands because it's not a real job in a way that he's used to. So he wanders off, and he gets to do a lot of hiking in the woods, and imagine his surprise when he hears a voice that says, "Hello, Lahiri. You've come." And he looks up and he says, "This man looks a lot like me, except he's sort of timeless in his look." And he didn't know it was Babaji. He just was on a hike. And Babaji said, "Come with me. You don't remember me yet." But he took him to a little cave, and in that little cave, Babaji had lovingly, for the whole of his lifetime, of Lahiri Mahasaya's lifetime, kept his little bowl and his little seating mats where he used to meditate with him in the cave. And he had held these things for him for this moment. So guru and disciple meet again in this cave in the Himalayas. And
he has, as Bhajana mentioned, this little desire. He used to be a king, and he didn't quite finish maybe that last little bit of say goodbye to the palace. So Babaji said, you've got a little bit of desire still in there, so I will just make a palace for you so you can finish it. So out of the ether, out of the atoms in the air, he developed a golden palace, which we have on our altar in the sanctuary, and we're looking to manifest its version here in our very own midst in Silicon Valley. But he finished that, and after that desire was finished, then Babaji said, you know, I have a way that you can get free from all desire forever. No more desires, no more suffering, no more wishing things were other than what they are, no more delusion. I have a way that you can have that you will always be free. And of course, Lahiri was pretty interested. So then Babaji said, okay, I will give you now this Kriya Yoga, and it will help you have this state of consciousness that you will make your heart ever more thrilled and perfectly content and happy and joyful. So he gave that to him. And here's Lahiri, who has a family and children back in his hometown and a lot of friends, one can imagine. And he knows that they too are seeing suffering in the world, and they would also like to have this freedom that Babaji's promising. So he says, I know that Kriya Yoga is just for people who can completely renounce everything in their heart and only want God. But do you think you might be able to relax the strictures a little bit? Because there's so many suffering people in the world, and why can't we give it to them too? Wouldn't it be nice if we could? And Babaji said, ah, the divine has spoken through you. The time is so that all sincere people can have this Kriya Yoga. So Lahiri comes down from the mountain after his 7 day. He said the 8th day he went up and he said, please let me stay with you. Well, who wouldn't, right? There you are, your guru, heart of your heart, everything you've ever wanted. You're in bliss. Who wants to go back into the dusty, dirty accountant office where he worked? But Babaji said, no, you have a work to do. Your life will show people who have families and household yogis, he said, will show them that they can have this life. They can be of the world and not of it. They can have trains go by and not be at all upset about it. Excuse me. They can attain the highest states of realization even while they're doing their daily responsibilities and raising their children and doing their civic duty. He said, they need to see that, and you're the one who will show them, because your consciousness will be always in this state. And so he went back. And one of the other things I really love about Lahiri is, just as Babaji is sort of remote, he's behind the scenes, he's kind of up in the clouds, he's a little bit beyond the reach of us, Lahiri is a little bit more in the reach of us. But he also has that kind of top of the waterfall purity that comes down through the Kriya Yoga line, which says, you know, you don't have to sign on a dotted line. You don't have to be a member. You don't have to do anything other than have a sincere, dedicated heart, and you can have Kriya Yoga. And he had, his way was non-institutional, I'll say. He definitely did not want to be part of, to make something happen that had his name and a school and a church, and that wasn't his work to do. So his work was very humble but very powerful. He had a little balcony probably smaller than this little mandir that we have. And he would sit there and meditate. He'd do his work during the day, accountancy. You know, his life, I often laugh, you know, his life was about a balanced life. And there he was, adding up the figures, you know, making them balance every day. It's almost kind of funny. But he'd do that work, then he'd come home. One assumes he'd have dinner, see his children and everything. And then he'd go out on this balcony or in his front room and just sit and meditate. And go deep, deep, deep in meditation. And that's what he did. And being India, but also being the power of that consciousness, people found him somehow through friends, and they would come. And his mission for them, his ministry, his just, you know, his the way he, I was going to say train people, but it wasn't even that, the way he was with people, he would just meditate. And they would tune into that consciousness and receive the benefits of that. And to a couple of close disciples, he said, okay, you will write. You will say some of these things. You will, in fact, do commentaries on the Gita and several other things. But I will infuse you if you tune into me. I won't write it myself, but you can do it by tuning in, and I will bless you. Swamiji often cites that when he was doing the work of Yogananda, writing those books and feeling Yogananda was actually writing them. He was just moving the pen and having the words come through, but that the truth and the consciousness was coming, just as Lahiri did. A couple of stories, and then we'll have a little kind of meditation to tune into the essence of what he said and taught. One story, of course, we know Yogananda from the autobiography was a child. He had cholera, a disease which is usually fatal in those days. And he was on his bed, very weak. His mother was there praying and praying. A little aside, Lahiri Mashai was the family guru. His parents had been initiated. And when he was a baby, Yogananda's mother took him to her guru, Lahiri Mashai, and he blessed him. He said, your son will be a powerful engine that will bring many people to God. So already, you know, he's in the family household. There was a little picture that Yogananda used to revere, love, and tune into and look at of Lahiri, and he would pray to it. And he said, as a little child, being completely innocent, anything can happen, he would pray and the picture would come alive. And Lahiri Mashai would come out like a big, bright vision, and it was very real. And then he would go back into the picture. So that same picture's in his room while he has cholera. And his mother says, please, son, bow. Just bow to Lahiri Mashai. I know you're too weak to hold your hands up, but just in your heart, bow to him. And Yogananda did that. And at that moment, there was a big light that came from the picture and completely healed him. The doctor came in and said, I don't know how this happened. This just doesn't happen. But his mother also saw the light and said, thank you. Got on her knees right away, said, thank you, Divine Guru. Thy light hath healed my son. And so that closeness is there in the Kriya Yoga line. I remember coming to Ananda and I said, oh, Swamiji, we do Kriya Yoga, right? He said, yes, we do the many Kriya Yogas are in India, he said. We do the Kriya Yoga of Lahiri Mashai. That's our Kriya Yoga. And all of these masters from Christ onward, Christ did something like that with his disciples as well. There's one other story that I found especially charming, then I will have a few moments where we can close our eyes and just think about Lahiri and some of the wisdom, essence of wisdom that he passed on. And that is, he was in the Kumbh Mela, which is a huge spiritual fair fest with many, many thousands and thousands of people who come. Sadhus from the hills come down, fakirs come, lots of people of varying levels of consciousness come. And one year, Lahiri Mashai was there at the Kumbh Mela, and he was walking along and he saw some sort of ash-covered ascetic. And he looked at him and he thought, you know, kind of seems like a hypocrite to me, because he doesn't seem to have a consciousness of a renunciate, of a sadhu. He's more interested in begging, he seemed to feel with his energy. So he was kind of thinking, you know, too bad. That isn't very nice to do that. And just as that happened, just at that instant, he looked over and there was Babaji. He didn't get to see Babaji very often. So he was, oh, Guruji, Guruji, what are you doing here? Oh, he said, I'm just washing the feet of this renunciate. And then when I'm finished, I'm going to go wash his utensils, his cooking utensils. And this was another sort of anchorite, just someone looking very poor and probably strange to Lahiri's eyes. He said, I'm going to do this. And Lahiri kind of understood, ah, he's trying to teach me a lesson. He said, well, I'm doing this because the thing that is most pleasing to God is humility, and I want to show that. And God is in all forms. But by serving the best and the worst of the sadhus, I want to show that God's humility is there. There's one humorous story for all the husbands and wives in the audience. And that is, there was a time when Lahiri Mahasaya, he was spending, once he retired from the railroad, now he's at home all the time, and he was spending a lot of his time in meditation. And his wife was getting a little concerned, maybe that there wasn't going to be enough money for the children to go to college or whatever her concerns were about the family, but she was concerned that he wasn't at all interested in money, and she was sort of seeing that it was kind of necessary. So she said, you know, it's too bad you don't want to take better care of your family with money. And he said, what do you mean? What are you asking for? You're asking for something from a nothing. And he just disappeared, went to the ceiling, and she was left going, oh, what have I done? You know, I've extinguished my guru into the ether, and maybe I better think about what I say to him, you know. He did end up being her guru. They were husband and wife, they had children, but at a certain point, she came into the bedroom and saw that he was levitated up and surrounded with light and bliss, and then she realized, no, this isn't just my husband. This is a great soul, and I will now become a disciple. But now close your eyes, and I'm going to read just a couple of things for tuning into Lahiri. This has been beautifully prepared with flowers. I'm just going to enjoy it. The Divine Gospel of Lahiri Mahasaya. By being humble, you can be truly great. All are immortal souls. By intellect, you can get everything in the world except realizing self. Mere book learning is not yajna or sacrifice. Kriya is yajna. Be ever listening for words of God hidden in gold mines of the heart. The impact of Kriya opens the door to the soul temple. By practice of Kriya, a longer stay in the Christ consciousness becomes possible. Kriya Yoga is above all samskaras. If one does sadhana merged in Brahman, desire perishes. Restlessness is bondage, and stillness is liberation. Ecstatic joy can be obtained even in the first Kriya. And Yogananda said even, Hongsa is baby Kriya. So even if you don't have the Kriya technique yet, you can still have a lot of these states of consciousness. Babaji told him, the cries of many bewildered worldly men and women have not fallen unheard on the ears of the great ones. You have been chosen to bring spiritual solace through Kriya Yoga to numerous earnest seekers. Tahiri Mahashaya gave Kriya initiation to those of every faith. Muslims and Christians were among his foremost disciples. He told them, just do whatever religion you do and just do your Kriya. Reflect that someday you will suddenly have to leave everything in this world. So make the acquaintanceship of God now. Prepare yourself for the coming astral journey of death by daily riding in the balloon of God perception. Meditate unceasingly that you may quickly behold yourself as the infinite essence, free from every form of misery. Cease being a prisoner of the body. Using the secret key of Kriya, learn to escape into spirit. Solve all your problems through meditation. Exchange unprofitable religious speculations for actual God contact. And there's one thing that also touched me, and I'll just share it with you. We're about to go on to Yukteswar, who Caitlin will tell us about his way of training his disciples. And he was very firm and direct and pretty harsh in many cases. But I was interested to hear about Lahiri Mahashaya. It said, if a disciple neglected any of his worldly duties, the master would gently correct and discipline him. But his words were mild and healing, even when he was forced to speak openly of a chela's faults. And that reminds me of my experience of how Swami used to correct us. Others have other experience, but for me, he was always healing and mild. He was direct and honest and true, but you always felt behind it was a loving hand of upliftment. That if you could take the criticism, just receive it, and tune into what was behind it, there was a liberating power, wish of being free from that. So mild and healing was kind of a nice way to say it. And I'll just finish with this one thing, which helps all of us. Though man's ingenuity for getting himself into trouble appears to be endless, the infinite sucker is no less resourceful. But there's hope for us all.
Lord, leave me no more. Do not dry the ocean of my love with the fires of my desires, with the fires of my restlessness. Do not dry the ocean of my love with the fires of my desires, with the fires of my restlessness. For thee I cry, for thee I weep, for thee I cry, for thee I weep. I'll cry no more, thou mine evermore. I'll cry no more, thou mine evermore. Thee I find behind the fringe of my mind. Thee I find behind the fringe of my mind. Hide no more, Lord, hide no more. Leave me not, Lord, leave me no more. Hide no more, Lord, hide no more. Leave me not, Lord, leave me no more. Do not dry the ocean of my love with the fires of my desires, with the fires of my restlessness. Do not dry the ocean of my love with the fires of my desires, with the fires of my restlessness. For thee I cry, for thee I weep, for thee I cry, for thee I weep. I'll cry no more, thou mine evermore. I'll cry no more, thou mine evermore. Thee I find behind the fringe of my mind. Thee I find behind the fringe of my mind. Hide no more, Lord, hide no more. Leave me not, Ma, leave me no more. Hide no more, Lord, hide no more. Leave me not, Ma, leave me no more. Do not dry the ocean of my love with the fires of my desires, with the fires of my restlessness. Do not dry the ocean of my love with the fires of my desires, with the fires of my restlessness, with the fires of my desires, with the fires of my restlessness, with the fires of my desires, with the fires of my restlessness.
Thank you. birds on the air. Soar above griefs and worries, seek joy and be gay. Often on earth, things of great worth, worldly ambitions defy. Sometimes a friend helps us ascend up from life's cares to the sky. Love is a star, though shining afar. It can guide us and help us toward light to draw nigh. Love is a star, though shining afar. It can guide us and help us toward light to draw.